Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. President Donald Trump has mobilized legal teams to challenge last week's election results in several states. Governor Kristi Noem, who hit the campaign trail hard for the president, supports those lawsuits. Meanwhile, Senator John Thune says claims of widespread fraud against Joe Biden in the general election are unfounded. It sounds like the start of a good Dakota Political Junkies discussion. Joining us for this special edition here on Tuesday of the Dakota Political Junkies, we have former South Dakota lawmaker Tom Dempster. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Lori.
Also with us, Madison Daily Leader publisher John Hunter. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Lori. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Mr. Hunter.
So, we had a Dakota Political Junkies conversation after the election, but at that time, votes were still being counted. And on Saturday, the projected winner was called, President-elect Joe Biden. And since then, there has been a flurry of lawsuits and tweets and not yet a concession speech, all kinds of things going on. But let's bring it here to South Dakota a little bit first. And Tom, let's start with you. The significance of Governor Kristi Noem, tweeting and speaking out about the election, claiming that there are widespread examples of fraud, which are unfounded claims. Where do you want to begin with the dialogue after the projected winner?
Well, Lori, I mean, anticipating that question, I went back to concession speeches and looked at some of our presidential candidates' concession speeches. And, of course, probably the most often reviewed would be John McCain's, when he stands and says, "I held in my heart nothing but love for this country and for all of its citizens, whether they supported me or Senator Obama. I wish Godspeed to the man who was my former opponent and will be my president." And then finally, I listened to President Nixon's concession speech to Senator Kennedy. And it was made at about 1 or 1:15 in the morning, and here's what he said. Quote, he says, "If this trend continues, he will have my support. One of the great features of America is we have political contests, and once a decision is made, we unite."
John Hunter, Governor Noem and others pointed out, in their words, that the media does not decide the winner of an election. And let's clarify that the media has not decided the winner of the election. The media has projected, and various organizations have projected the winner. There's still certifications and canvasses happening across the country, but it is fairly common, to Tom's historical notes, that once that projection is made, a candidate makes a phone call to the person who won.
Right. Well, it's like everything else with this presidency, there are, whatever was the norm before, let's not do that. So, and it's true that the media does not do that, nor does any other organization. They have models and so forth that project winners. So there's a whole process. Yes, it has to be canvassed and certified, and then the Electoral College has to get together. And, I mean, there's lots of things, and that's okay. In fact, there's some pretty good checks and balances along the way to make sure that this goes. And that's part of the reason that we have a distance between Election Day and Inauguration Day. Maybe, I would guess, probably as long as any country in the world, right? I mean, to have 75 days or whatever it is between when you decide on an elector or on a president and then when he takes office. So, yes, and certainly all the legal options, we've used those before, and you can contest those, but then there does come a point, whether it's 1:15 in the morning in Nixon's case or whether it's November, whatever, or December, in the case of Al Gore and Donald Trump. But there becomes an inevitability, and you'd hope that the loser would act graciously and would be would act in the spirit of the United States and try to say, "Gee, this is how this was, and we've tried to respect the office as much as, when I say we, Americans, to respect the office, even if you didn't like the holder of the office at the moment. So we'd all hope that that would occur sometime in the next couple of months.
Tom, Al Gore famously made a concession call and then had to walk that back a little bit as the situation in Florida in 2000 sort of played out. But what I'm curious, Tom, are your thoughts about, at this point, you know, to John's point, this presidency isn't necessarily following traditions, and many of the supporters of this president have, you know, like that. That's, you know, they like the fact that there are many traditions not followed for a variety of reasons. What does it mean, though, when the governor of the state and the president of the nation are talking about election fraud that is completely unfounded?
Well,
widespread sure. Election fraud that is completely unfounded.
Yeah, I mentioned to my wife after the election, finally peace, calm, and resolution, and apparently that is not going to be the case. What it means is, I mean, I think that all of that ultimately becomes harmful to democracy. It takes away the strength of what we have. It certainly takes away the strength of our faith in our electoral system. When you look at all of these elections as they have been held throughout the country, you have to say that is really remarkable. With all of the mail-in ballots, with all of the early voting, to have the system work as good as it is really quite something. To stand and to paint and to paint that is fraud. Ultimately, I think is forgive me. I think is undemocratic and grotesque.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the governor's other recent tweets, specifically regarding social media. And she tweeted out in the last couple days about wanting to find a different place. Here, I'm pulling up the exact words here so I get them correct in her tweet. It's official. I've joined Parler app. That was originally Parlay for the French, but mostly it's pronounced Parler right now. Find me at Governor Noem. We need social media platforms that respect and protect free speech. We need a whole lot more respect for freedom and personal responsibility in this country. She also joined MeWe and started a MeWe account. Let's talk a little bit about this push to snap back against Twitter and Facebook. And find a new place to find and protect what she calls free speech. But when you go to those apps, John Hunter, when you go to Parler or Parlay, one of the trending hashtags is #Jews. There's a lot of anti-Semitism and really gross sort of things happening on that app. You know, where do you begin with the governor sort of celebrating something that is really widely known as being anti-Semitic?
Well, it's certainly new to me. I'm not familiar with those sites, but Governor Noem, I think, has tried to, in a lot of cases, get her message out without using media as we've known it, and President Trump has as well. A lot of this is in the Trump playbook that he'd say, "Look, I'm just going to say what I want here, and if you have to undo it, or if you have to explain it later, that's okay." And so it is a kind of a new world in the last decade, the kind of communication. And I think Governor Noem is choosing, I think, a path of getting that message out in whatever form it is. And she may very well, if it turns out to be a bad site, kind of undo that and say, "Look, no harm. That I didn't know that." And so I don't. My whole point with that is, I think she's trying to get a message out, but I don't think she's intentionally trying to align herself with bad ideas.
Tom Dempster, could that backfire against her as people associate with her? With, I mean, certainly, if you're on Facebook, people don't associate with every bad thing that happens on Facebook associated with you because you're on Facebook. But could something like that stick to her when people do follow her to a new social media app?
Well, I've always said politicians, myself included, but politicians who complain about the news media, John Hunter, politicians who complain about the news media are like mountain climbers who complain about the height of the Himalayan mountains. I mean, it's just part and parcel of the deal. Now we get to say anything and everything that we want on all of the social media platforms. Some of the social media platforms are trying to fact or truth check them. Ultimately, Lori, it comes back to my discipline that says gauge our political leaders on their capacity for temperance, prudence, wisdom, and justice. And whatever social platform that you are on, ultimately you've got to ultimately tell the truth. Ultimately, the only thing that you have, despite a huge majority in South Dakota, ultimately the only thing that you have is your credibility. And what you do to lessen one's credibility takes away from one's strength.
Lori, may I add something to that?
Please.
So, you know, and that's also, I think, part of the last 4 years where you say, if you don't agree with my idea, then you're against me. And that's happened both kind of on the staff level, where if a member of the president's staff doesn't agree with him on a particular issue, that disloyalty is instantly punished. You saw that with Mark Esper today, being fired as defense secretary because he essentially wouldn't bring out troops to settle the unrest in June. But it also, I think, goes to media, where you say, look, if this particular media outlet has an editorial and it says we don't agree with this healthcare policy or foreign policy or whatever that kind of thing is, then therefore you're against me and you need to be punished from that. So I think it's one of the legacies, I think, of this presidency, is that a sense of loyalty above all other factors. And some people might like that and others don't, I think. But it's part of the legacy of what's happened in the last 4 years.
Yeah. Moving ahead, we mentioned U.S. Senator John Thune from South Dakota, who has said the claims of fraud against Joe Biden in the general election are unfounded. He's also today been reelected as Republican whip for the 117th Congress, which begins in January. Tom, as someone like Senator John Thune goes forward, not only for South Dakota, but for the nation, with a lame duck presidency, with changes in the Senate, we won't know what the Senate makeup will be until the runoffs in Georgia, some real leadership challenges, particularly at a time in our country when we need everything from being able to fund the government operations to deal with the COVID-19 crisis, which is worsening almost daily in the U.S. Some real leadership challenges for U.S. Senator John Thune, but it looks like he is going to be in the same place as he was before to lean into some of those challenges. What do you want? How should we think about what's happening with Senator Thune in the upcoming Congress?
Well, I'm thankful for that, which I'm going to interpret as saying we have a democracy. The election that we had last week was indeed an election. It's time for us to take a deep breath. It's time for us to work together, because indeed we have some real problems, some problems that must be solved. Anything else gets in the way of our solving those problems. That's probably more than what he said. but that's what he said to me.
Not a direct quote, but
thank you.
But I want to talk about compromise because I was listening, you know, we're going to have a conversation in hour two with USD political scientist Mike Card about the Electoral College. And I was listening to an interview from Steve Inskeep that Kara Hetland brought to my attention this morning with an author of a book about the founding principles and the founding fathers and James Madison and some of the things that were really baked into our Constitution. I'll start with you, Tom, with this and then bring John back in. But this idea that if we are all the checks and balances and how they are just cooked into this system to keep people from their worst impulses, to keep too much power from happening in any one place in the nation or in Washington. And this idea that gridlock is not necessarily a bug, it's the purpose of not being able to compromise. Compromise is sort of forced in this country in some ways. Do you think, Tom Dempster, that we will get to the place where when you send back people like Lindsey Graham and John Thune and Mitch McConnell, but then you also send back to Congress, you know, AOC and all the members of the squad got reelected, you know, Vice or President-elect Joe Biden is going, there's no way forward here without compromise, is there?
Well, I mean, democracy isn't easy. Democracy is unnatural. Democracy is very fragile. I mean, this creature that we call democracy, I always say, is all about our hopes, aspirations, our dreams, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and the natural rights of man, right? But our founders recognized that the underbelly of that creature that we call democracy, in that underbelly is, guess what? Us. And we are filled with fear. We're filled with greed. We're filled with mistrust. We're filled with hostility. We're filled with resentment. It takes everything we can do to respond to our better natures and say, let's let this be and let's pull together in debate and in conversation so that we can unite and do this unnatural thing that we call a democracy. It's really hard. Frankly, I've been frightened in the past 4 years how easily it is for someone to exploit what? Original sin? Exploit our natural fear, greed, mistrust, and all of those things. It's hard.
Jen Hunter, thoughts about compromise and the mandate of that from our founding fathers? We've talked a lot about the founding fathers this year, especially in South Dakota.
Well, I think Tom articulated that very well, and democracy is very challenging, and it does force compromise. And when we are unable to compromise, then power shifts around. Now, remember, we talked about the founding fathers. Of course, the Declaration of Independence sent to King George III. The whole point was that we didn't want a king. And that was, we're trying to think of a different way to do that. It puts power more in the sense of the people, with some caveats with that. And the Electoral College is one of those that just said, look, we're not going to have this kind of popular election for whatever reason, that all the Americans can't be informed about who the president would be. So we'll have this kind of pseudo way of doing that. South Dakota ends up being a beneficiary of that, being slightly more powerful because of our congressional representation. Your point, Lori, we think of gridlock, and that seems to happen a fair amount, and sometimes that lends to stability, right? If you had, if you don't have gridlock, you have constant action, constant change, and it's hard for people to plan and live their lives as things are changing. So in some senses, there's this idea that a split government is healthy, and I think that's true. The three branches of government should balance one another. Maybe the two political parties, which in many cases kind of harm the system, but if they're balanced as well, then they can do less harm. So I think there are some things that we're kind of surprised, as hard as Tom described the democracy is, that it's survived this long. It continues to give power to the individual citizens, and we should be proud of that every moment and try not to lose that or give that up.
And in a time when so many South Dakotans are dying from COVID-19 and we look at the role of government in that, we just have so many questions about the days ahead. It's not just about the election. It's about all of that and more. So many more conversations to have. Tom Dempster, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lori.
John Hunter, thank you as well. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Lori. Take care, Tom.